Under a soon-to-be introduced bill, Wisconsin police officers would be permitted to use deadly force only as a last resort, after de-escalation tactics were attempted. Do you support or oppose this proposal? That is today's big question. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, August 31st. We will talk with the bill's author and an opponent of the measure during this week's big question and welcome your questions and views. Do you think there should be stricter guidelines on when police can use deadly force? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We also, as we always do each Wednesday, have an online big question. You can vote in the online poll. You'll find that linked to Facebook and also at WPR.org/joy. Let me welcome our guests. Happy to have with us Chris Taylor, a Democratic state representative from Madison. She is planning to introduce this bill, which would establish stricter guidelines for police using deadly force. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Joy.
Thank you for joining us. We also have with us Van Wongard, a Republican state senator from Racine, who is also a former police officer. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Chris.
Hi.
Well, let's start with you, Representative Taylor, since you are proposing this legislation. In your opening statement, why does Wisconsin need stricter guidelines when it comes to using police using deadly force?
Well, first of all, obviously this has been a state conversation. This has been a national conversation that we've had on officer-involved shootings, on officer-involved deaths. You know, we've been having this conversation in my own district for 4 years because officer-involved shootings, unfortunately, are going up in my community. That's where the trajectory is going. And when I look at the incidents, we've had 3 officer-involved shootings in the last 4 years. None of these individuals were armed. When I was looking at these incidents and trying to assess, well, what is the standard that's being used? What I heard from my own police department is, well, we're following the state standards on the use of force. So that led me down a path of trying to figure out, well, what are the state standards on the use of force? It's not easy to figure out. They're not codified in one place. You really have to look at federal case law. And what I discovered in looking at federal case law is they're quite broad, the standards on the use of force. The legal standard really that is applied is this objective reasonableness standard. If an officer believes that an individual poses a grave imminent danger to themselves or others, that's when they can use force and lethal force. So that's the legal use of force guideline. It doesn't necessarily get at the appropriate use of force, however, and many communities throughout the country have gone way beyond this standard in setting some better, more definitive standards on when force can be used. And you see this all over the country. You see it in New York City. You see it in Richmond, California, in Dallas. These communities have had a lot of success in reducing the incidence of officer-involved deaths and while protecting their officers, because that's what we all want to do. We all want to reduce violent encounters for the public and the police. So the 4 things that kind of stood out to me, and we did, my office has been doing a ton of research. We really have tried to look at every police department. Some states have passed laws regarding the use of force, but states, there's not a really great model out there. But what we found were there some consistencies in policies from departments that seem to be able to reduce these incidents of officer-involved deaths while protecting their own officers. So one of the first things that we noticed was this adoption of standards that really treat lethal force as a last resort, that other things should be, other ways of dealing with these crisis situations should be adopted if possible. And so that was one of the first things.
Let me get Representative Taylor. We'll get into the other things you found, but let's get Senator Wongard to react to so far what Representative Taylor has had to say, that we need to have this should be a last resort, and there should be de-escalation tactics, Senator Wongard.
Well, first of all, I think that this is being based on a false premise. We're starting out and saying that officers just go in and they're just trigger happy, that they're thinking about using that force as the first thing that they bring out of their toolbox. And that is absolutely incorrect. That is not true. An officer does not go to work thinking that they're going to use deadly force first thing out of the gate in the morning. An officer is trained and through their training process, and this isn't just, you know, a couple hours. This is hundreds and thousands of hours of training throughout their career to make good decisions and to be problem solvers. I will tell you right now that the first thing that they think about is not using, that they're going to use lethal force. It's about how can I resolve this issue without any conflict. That's why they have the use of force continuum that every officer is trained with, that you escalate that use of force continuum so that it meets or it's one step above what the aggressor is. You know, the idea is not to go in and kill somebody. The idea is to stop the threat and to protect life. And so officers don't come out there with that idea that, you know, I want to go and shoot somebody today. That is the farthest thing from their mind. It's, I don't want to have to use force when I get out there. And I can tell you, this is the norm nationally. So when we have legislators come forward to say that we have to now dictate to these officers that they have to absolutely, this has to be the last resort, now we're going to dump more things out of the officers' processing while they're working on a conflict situation with their people that they're responding to. We have cameras on them that can record everything now that we can second-guess them, et cetera. They are so overloaded with all these people second-guessing what they do in a split second. That's why it comes down to training. If you got good training, the officers out there, there is a process to follow. And if you follow the process, you have a much, much better chance of resolving the issue. And from what I've seen nationally and all the incidents that we've had so far where people have jumped to conclusions about what happened, they didn't follow the process. They didn't wait to see what unfolded, what the witnesses said, what the physical evidence said. Did it support what the witnesses said and the victims and the proposed shooter? So these are all things that have to go through this normal process. And, you know, the bill that Representative Taylor has brought forward, actually she introduced it from what I see from drafting notes after the session was done last year. You know, so that's why it didn't really go through that process. And apparently it wasn't an issue, you know, some of the parts of this weren't really an issue when the bill was originally put through in 13-14. I wasn't there. This would have probably have been a little bit different discussion. But I do agree that, you know, when it comes to having outside agencies involved, that's a good thing.
So yeah. I did not introduce this bill, so I'm not sure what the senator is referring to. I did work on a bill that was done in coalition with law enforcement with Representative Gary Bies, who is a former deputy sheriff, that did establish a better outside process for the investigation of officer-involved deaths. The discussions I'm having now, and there's not a bill, these are discussions that I'm still having. These are areas that my community is discussing, that I'm talking to advocates and law enforcement about, is what can we do better? I don't accept in my community that I have had three officer-involved deaths in 4 years. None of the individuals were armed with a gun or a deadly weapon. But what they all did share was some kind of incapacity, either through mental illness or from a drug or alcohol use. So my community wants to see change. My community wants to see some very clear policies articulated. This is not a new thing. As I said, there are law enforcement agencies throughout this country that are going above and beyond this very minimum federal standard. And they are looking at the data. They are looking at the evidence about what is working and keeping their officers safer, because we've also seen an increase in the first 6 months of this year of officers being killed. There's a slight uptick in the first 6 months of this year. There's a slight uptick also in officer-involved deaths this year, unfortunately. We have to do better. It is not acceptable for us to say we can't do anything as policymakers. So I think what the senator is saying is he's agreeing with me in some respect that, yes, that is a good policy, that that's already happening. Well, to find any mention of any of the policies, whether it be in state law or federal law or even in the training guidelines that the Law Enforcement Standard Board puts out, there is a mention of using lethal force as a last resort in the training materials, but you've got to get to it, and you've got to read about 70 pages before you get to that statement. Why not put some of these general principles in state law, establish some consistency, given that what the senator said, that I do believe officers do strive to do that.
Let me jump in because we do have news next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about this soon-to-be-introduced bill that would allow police officers to only use deadly force as a last resort. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In today's big question, we are asking you if you think there should be stricter guidelines on when police can use deadly force. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with a Democratic State Representative from Madison, Chris Taylor, who is planning on introducing a bill that would establish stricter guidelines for police using deadly force, saying that deadly force should be used only as a last resort after de-escalation tactics are attempted. Representative Taylor, also the co-author of a bill that required an outside investigation when there is a police officer involved shooting. And I understand she's also thinking of tweaking that legislation as well. She's telling us why she thinks this bill is a good idea. We are also talking with an opponent of the proposed stricter guidelines. Van Wongard is a Republican state senator from Racine and a former police officer. And let me, Senator Wongard, get your response to the specific proposal that there has to be de-escalation tactics employed before deadly force is used, and it needs to be a last resort. What's your response to that?
First of all, let me just say this too. I was an investigator for 25 of my 30 years on the police department, so I understand what the investigative process is. And an officer in general gets out there, I mean, firing their weapon as a police officer is not a decision that's made lightly, and it is already a last resort. And you know, no officer joins the department, you know, to use lethal force. Lethal force is only used to protect themselves or the public or to protect life, you know. So when I look at what the thought process is here about escalating or de-escalating, what the officer's response is going to be, the officer's already, when he's responding to that, he's responding through his training that he's received over his career to whatever that specific incident is that's occurring. And every single incident is different. You have a different set of players. You have a different set of circumstances. And they have to consider all of that. And it's a lot of pressure for an officer to be out there to serve and protect and do this every day and do it with integrity. And if they use the process and if they follow the guidelines, when I say guidelines, those are the guidelines of the force continuum that you don't go in and enter into a situation thinking that I'm just going to go in and shoot people. You know, that's not what the premise is to begin with. You know, when an officer responds to something where he's going to have to make the decision for lethal force, whether or not he's going to utilize that lethal force, this whole process has to occur in just a split second. You know, they have to think about, can you live with yourself if you fire your weapon and kill somebody? And they're not looking to kill somebody to begin with. It's to stop the threat, to get the situation under control. Will you accidentally harm a bystander? Will you make it home to your family? And then is the force that I'm using, is it justified? All those things are going through that officer's head in a split second. Yeah. You know what? All of those questions and decisions must be made in a split second, shorter than saying the sentence I just said. So we have to keep things in a perspective here. I think that the training process we have is in place. Our Bureau of Training and Standards does a good job of tracking that and requiring training by officers. I totally agree with Chris that we need more training in the mental health side of things, and we need more resources for mental health. But I'll tell you, somebody that has a mental health issue can kill you as fast or faster than somebody who doesn't, because they're not even thinking about what they're doing. So the response has to be a measured response to whatever the situation is, and training helps us get there. It's the process that has to be followed.
Representative Taylor, we didn't really get into your proposal. It says use de-escalation tactics first. What exactly do we mean by de-escalation
tactics? Right, and let me be really clear. What the standard that I am looking at that I think has been successful, both and has been adopted by the U.S. Department of Justice regarding the necessity of using deadly force, doesn't say you can never use deadly force. It doesn't say that at all. It says deadly force arises when other means of preventing immediate and grave danger to officers or other persons have failed or would likely fail. So I would, and again, this legislation is not drafted. It's still ongoing discussions. I want to see if we can get some consensus. I certainly don't have all the answers here. But the very vague federal standards are not working. And that's why we see what's happening in this country, in this state. So de-escalation is, and I should say, it's not specified at all in training that de-escalation training should be required. In fact, there is an annual training requirement. I think it would be very smart to add de-escalation to that. Right now, that only includes firearm training and high-speed chase training. There's nothing there about de-escalation. But de-escalation really is something that we're seeing departments adopt that have really made a difference in protecting officers and the public. And that's really about tactics and techniques that are used by officers which seek to minimize the likelihood of the need to use force during an incident. It's really the training an officer receives, and I'd like to see a lot more of this done, a lot more of a priority on this, that they shall attempt to slow down or stabilize situations so that you have more time and options and resources are available to resolve incidents peacefully. Now, officers are doing this. Every day I see evidence of this in my community. But let's put it in a policy. Why shouldn't it be very clearly articulated in a policy? Why shouldn't our training standards be incorporating this concept that is being used all over this country? It's being used successfully by the Dallas Police Department. It's being used successfully in Las Vegas, in Seattle. They're seeing great success in reducing incidents of the use of force. They're seeing great success in reducing complaints against police. That's what we should be striving for.
Let's put this into policy very clearly, Senator Weingart.
Well, I think it already is pretty clear. I think the officers...
It's not. It's not. Where is it? Show me where it is, because I don't see it.
If you look at the Bureau of Training and Standards and you look at the force continuum that is put into actual training, first of all, you have verbal judo. You try to diffuse the situation verbally. And then, you know, as the situation starts to escalate, you might look at using the use of force now. So I'm going to put my hands on somebody. Or am I going to use pepper spray? Or am I going to use a baton? Or am I going to use my stun gun? Or am I going to draw my firearm? I mean, all these different steps that gets you all the way to the point where there's a potential of using lethal force, they're in the training process, and that is part of the process, and that is pretty much, I think, nationally that you have to go through those steps. I can't just jump every one of those other steps if one of those steps would have applied or would have been usable. It would not make any sense. So we have to look at the common sense of what the application is of the force continuum. And that's one thing, I'm sorry, we cannot legislate that. We cannot legislate common sense. You know, it's just like all these different situations that have occurred nationally lately where everybody has predetermined, you know, what happened with these situations. We're finding out that once the process worked through and we had witnesses come forward and the physical evidence was there, these individuals were exonerated in the shooting incidents that they were involved in because they used the right techniques and the right process in the situation. But we have media that jumps in and they predetermine and they start, you know, all these suppose this, suppose that, before the investigators are even at the scene working on the investigation. That doesn't make any sense.
Let me take some calls. Jeff in Green Bay is with us first. Hello, Jeff.
Hello. This is just another, just more furthering of the blame police first from the lies of hands up, don't shoot. Everybody believes, and everybody wants to blame the police first. And it's this pure window dressing, attempting to put policy to the reactions of a criminal doesn't really work. These situations escalate very quickly, and if you think we have a problem now, as people see what police are being blamed for, there's going to become a shortage of policemen, and when we have that shortage of policemen, then let's see what happens.
Yeah, what's your response to that, Representative Taylor?
Look, my goal is to make police officers safer, and that's what I'm looking at evidence-based research that has been done to say, well, what does make police officers safer? What makes communities safer? This issue of de-escalation, the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing, this is one of the recommendations that came out of that task force, very comprehensive task force, put this in a policy, the emphasis on de-escalation. I am not saying that it can be used in all circumstances. There's absolutely situations where you're not going to be able to use it. Things happen very, very, very quickly. But the recommendations and all of the, if you look at where I think policing is going, not where it was 10 years ago, you're seeing more and more departments emphasize putting policies in place, not just saying we're going to train for it. We're going to put it in our policy that this is going to be an important component of what we expect from our officers. And the results are officers are safer because they're being trained not to engage in using force. So not harming someone else, but not harming themselves. So that's the goal. I'm not blaming police officers. Police, I have utmost respect for law enforcement, for all of our public service and first responders who are out there. But you cannot look at what's happening. I can't look at what's happening in my own community where police shootings are on the rise and not say, how do we address the situation so everybody's safer? Yes. And there's ways we can do it.
Senator Wongard, what is your response to this would help make police safer, too?
No, that's a false premise, too.
That's what the research shows.
I can tell you this. Experience that I have, and people may not want to hear this, but 30 years as a law enforcement officer and not in a small department. It was on a city receiving department. I started in 1972, so it was when we had a lot of unrest and issues going on back in 1972. After 30 years of being in law enforcement, having served on the SWAT team as a crisis negotiator, you know, our thought was never to end the situation by taking somebody's life. I worked hours and hours and hours on the phone to defuse situations verbally so we wouldn't have to use force. That has been, ever since I was on the department, that was our focus. Now let's fast forward. I retired from the department in 2001, and I was appointed to the Police and Fire Commission, the first Police and Fire Commission. I was ever a police officer on the Police and Fire Commission, and they didn't want me initially until after I got on there, and they found out that, gee, I wasn't just, you know, leaning for all my buddies. I was all of a sudden bringing a semblance of understanding and experience into the process, and I think that this is something that is missed. If you don't walk in the shoes of those individuals and you haven't experienced it, I had 10 years as a police and fire commissioner hiring people and firing people and creating, you know, guidelines and training issues and things like that with our department. And we had a book that was policy and procedures that was probably 4 inches thick in our policy and procedure book because everybody needed to know where the line was and what you could do and you couldn't do. But common sense was never written into that because you can't legislate or you can't, you know, force common sense. It's got to be there to begin with. And that's why it's got to be a good process in the hiring process with individuals. It's got to be a good process training those officers. You know, if you really want to do something to help the situation, you got to allow the process to work, number one. Let the investigators do their job. And if they follow the process, there's going to be clarity and transparency when they're done because you're going to be able to look at everything they did in their investigation. And then we're going to be able to second guess what they did and why they did it. But I can guarantee you, when I did my investigations, you know, I looked at the physical evidence and my report either supported or it didn't support what was being said based on the physical evidence proving my hypothesis. And that's where we have to let this whole process work out. So I think just saying that we're going to force officers to now, you know, say that, you know, this has to be the absolute last resort. What does that mean? The officer's using that as their last resort to begin with. They don't go to work intending on taking somebody's life. And that's never the thought. If you have a bad situation that's occurring, the idea is to stop the threat, not to go out and kill people.
Very briefly, Representative Taylor, I did interrupt you when you wanted to go into your four things that you learned from your research. What is the evidence that the stricter guidelines, such as what you're suggesting, would make everyone safer?
Well, you can look at Dallas. You can look at New York. You can look at Baltimore. You can look all over this country about departments that are saying, we're going to have clear guidelines. We're going to put this in our policies. It's not just going to be in the training manual. It's actually going to be a priority. And you can see incidents of using force decrease, incidents of lethal force decrease, incidents of a decrease, complaints against police officers, less police officers being hurt. So this is the kind of data that we're starting to see. I'm not talking about 40 years ago. I'm not talking about 10 years ago. What I'm trying to do is say, can we reach a consensus around some of these broad principles and move forward in a way that is safe for everybody? That is what I believe our communities want. That is, I believe, what the vast majority of people in our state want. This is not, you know, the public against the police. That is a really false dichotomy. This is what I'm trying to do is bring people together. Talk to law enforcement. What do you think about these things? Because this is what the data shows. These are the recommendations coming out of the task force, not that were convened 5 years ago, the task force that have been looking at these issues from the president's level to PERC, to other policing organizations that are starting to get out there out in front about what are best practices. So to say we're just going to let the process run its course, that hasn't worked in my community.
Let me
people shot in my community who are unarmed. The process isn't working.
Well, let me press on that, because some would say, Representative Taylor, in those cases in Madison that you're referring to, at least one of them, there was the allegation that the suspect who was fatally shot was going for the officer's gun. And so therefore then, you know, that officer can't necessarily go through a bunch of de-escalation tactics when that's happening.
Well, that's the Paul Heenan case. And what happened in that, and, you know, we can spend a lot of time debating the details of those cases. And that is disputed. There was a witness in that case who actually had a very different account of what occurred. And then the officer involved in that case ultimately did end up having, I think, over 100 complaints filed against him for various other infractions that he committed. That was someone who was intoxicated and unarmed. The trend that I see in my own community is not people being shot by the police who are active shooters. That's actually not what has occurred in the last 10 years. Mostly it's individuals who have mental health issues or who are intoxicated or under the influence of a drug. So, you know, you look at places like New York. The city of New York has a lot of issues, but one thing I think they've done very, very well is a very specific protocol on dealing with mentally ill individuals. They try not to use any kind of force. They bring in specialists immediately. So there are also, I think, very interesting things that could be done that I would be very interested in talking with the law enforcement standards boards to see if they could develop some best practices around a handling of mentally ill individuals. But when I look at what's happened in my own community, you know, I think that I didn't see some of these de-escalation tactics that I think maybe could have been employed. Of course, hindsight's 2020. I'm not interested in going back. I'm interested in going forward.
Let me jump in, because we do have another newscast coming up from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we have many more phone calls. A lot of people want to weigh in on today's big question. We are asking if you would support or oppose a proposal that would employ stricter standards or guidelines on police when it comes to the use of deadly force. Should the use of deadly force be only as a last resort after de-escalation tactics are attempted? This is the Ideas Network. In this week's big question, we are asking, should it be harder for police officers in Wisconsin to use deadly force? Should deadly force be only as a last resort? Should that be written into state statutes? Should police officers have to use de-escalation tactics first? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with two guests, one who is going to propose that legislation in Madison. Chris Taylor is a Democratic state representative from Madison. We are also joined by a former police officer from Racine, Republican State Senator Van Wongard. And we welcome your questions about this proposal and your thoughts about it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You'll find the online poll on Facebook and at wpr.org. It reads, under a soon-to-be-introduced bill, Wisconsin police officers would be permitted to use deadly force only as a last resort after de-escalation tactics were attempted. Do you support or oppose this proposal? And then you get to choose, support, oppose, or not sure. Let's take some more calls. Rob in Radisson is with us now. Hi, Rob.
Good morning. Yes, we need new guidelines for police force on deadly force. In such situation, an officer's mantra in their head should be saying, I'm here to serve and protect. And I would suggest an educational program for police that could be named, I'm here to serve and protect. Maybe this phrase could be included in the legislation.
Yeah. So, Senator Wongard, what about that?
Well, what can I say? I agree that there needs to be policies in place that identify what that force continuum is. But again, it comes down to, as an example, Representative Taylor was talking about, you know, New York and what they do in New York. They have 36,000 police officers in New York, and they're doing all kinds of different things to reduce officer-involved shootings. I listened to the police commissioner last night on cable talking about some of the things that they've done to reduce those police-involved shootings. And, you know, it still comes down to the officer making that split-second decision and having good training to base that decision process on. And, you know, when we start doing things like this and we start thinking about challenging the officers and what their decision process is when they have taken some action without waiting for all of the data, evidence, information, witness statements and everything to be correlated and brought in, we do a disservice to everybody, especially when we're trying to instill in the community that we have integrity in our departments. I would say if you got a bad officer, get them off of there. Absolutely. I have no problem with that. And I'll tell you, bad officers don't last long on a park because the other officers will root them out, and so will the community. And I've seen this where we have had good officers that have been just totally devastated by a shooting situation where they had to take somebody's life. Not a good thing.
Let me share this comment for you, Senator Wongard, from Sheree on Facebook. If police officers can confront a white man with a knife and be 5 feet away from him and not shoot, they can de-escalate other situations as well. A black man being shot in the back while running away is a crime. Police officers are supposed to protect us all. I support Black Lives Matter, and I support police officers. The black community and the police department have the same goal. We need to be able to work together. That can't happen if black people feel like they are targets. I'm not accusing all black officers of bad behavior. The problem arises when there are bad cops and the big blue wall comes up. It seems some police departments have issues letting their problem officers go.
And I guess I would say, you know, first of all, I do not support the organization Black Lives Matter because I think that they have an agenda that's other than a positive agenda, number one. But all lives matter. And when an officer goes in there to start out and preface it that whether somebody's white, black, male, or female, that tells me right away that there's some prejudices playing, you know, out here, that an officer doesn't have the ability or he has to be blind in his approach to what he's doing. And, you know, while that enters in, this is where training comes in, and this is where good supervision comes in, and this is where support from the community comes in. This is where COP houses come in. We have COP houses here in Racine in our toughest neighborhoods where we have officers that have been planted in the neighborhood as a resident to work with maybe a 20-block circumference or radius of that cop house. And the people from that neighborhood respond directly to that officer, know him on a first-name basis. We've taken back those neighborhoods. They haven't tried that in Milwaukee.
Let me get a brief. Let me ask you, because we are running out of time. Senator Weingard, you deny that there's any difference in treatment between police officers and white or black, alleged suspects?
Well, I don't remember any time in my career that I drove down the street and saw somebody breaking into a building, and I said, well, gee, that person's white, so I'm not going to arrest them, or that person's black, and I'm going to arrest them. If there's an individual that's violating the law, they're going to get arrested for it. Now, whether or not they get a citation or they get a verbal warning, I'm going to take some police action with that situation, depending on what the situation is and what it warrants. But the distance is 21 feet. That's a kill zone. 21, if somebody has a knife and they're 21 feet away, you have the ability to use lethal force because that's a killing zone for the officer. If you go through training, and I would ask Representative Taylor if she's ever done this, you know, you have an officer that has his hand on his firearm, and you have a person that's 21 feet away with a knife in their hand, and you know that person's going to come at you, and they're going to try to stab you with that knife. And I know for a fact that that person's going to do that, and now they just say, as soon as that person starts running, I have to draw my firearm, and I have to fire. Well, I can tell you, many times out of none, I got knifed by that individual. Of course, it's a rubber knife, but it just shows you that even if your mindset is that this can happen, 21 feet is nothing. And I'm telling you, it doesn't make any difference whether that person that's put a knife in you is a person of color, a female that's 4'2", and you're 6'8". It doesn't make any difference when they're
standing. You know, that 21-foot training standard, that's an old standard. This is not 40 years ago. It's not 20 years ago. I don't know how the senator cannot recognize, does he not read the paper, does he not watch the news and see what is going on in our country, to not address these issues, to not put some basic standards that he seems to agree with me on in policy that we know can work. It's just a real abdication of our responsibility, in my opinion, as lawmakers to address these very serious issues. The bottom line is the state standard right now doesn't incorporate what I'm talking about, these broad principles. Lethal force, use it when you can as a last resort. Train and incorporate policies of de-escalation. Look at proportionality. That's the other big piece that many departments are looking at. Don't use force that exceeds the threat. These are just basic principles that we could very easily incorporate and provide more guidance. In terms of the caller who called in, I absolutely agree. I think the other broad standard that would be very, very helpful to articulate that I don't think anyone disagrees with is that the primary duty of all members of law enforcement is to preserve human life, including the lives of individuals being placed in police custody. That is a very positive affirmation of what the primary duty is. Many departments have incorporated the standard. There are police departments in Wisconsin who have incorporated the standard. Unfortunately, we don't have it in Madison, but that is where policing is going in recognition of these standards. So I agree with the caller. I think that is a very important affirmation of what it is, what the point is of law enforcement.
Let's go to Brian in Portage next. Hello, Brian.
Hi. Yeah, I just don't think that Senator Taylor's proposal contributes anything this situation. Having been a law enforcement officer involved in the use of deadly force, I can assure Senator Taylor that I was number one on the list of people that didn't want that incident to occur. It just seems to me like another hoop that law enforcement has to jump through to protect themselves and to protect the public.
All right, it's kind of fuzzy line, but another hoop for law enforcement to jump through, Representative Taylor.
Well, what Senator Weingard is saying is it's already happening. This is already what's being done in training. So I don't see how incorporating, and this, you know, this is not saying you can't use deadly force except after your de-escalation. Let me make that very clear. That's not the policy I'm considering. I'm looking at other policies, including one set forth by the U.S. Department of Justice, about when is it appropriate to use deadly force. And the standard that I'm looking at and getting feedback from, you know, a whole host of people is, you know, using deadly force when other available means of preventing immediate and grave danger to officers or other persons have failed or would likely fail. So I'm not saying law enforcement should ever put themselves in a situation where they're risking their own life because they don't want to shoot somebody who's threatening them or posing a threat to the public. But what we know is that, you know, policies like this that are very clear, that articulate a very specific preference to try to avoid lethal force, except when you have to use it. I think, first of all, that's reflective of our society standards. You know, people in the public who I've talked to about this, they already think that's happening. That is not the state standard, however. The state standard is much broader than that policy. So what I'm trying to do is take consensus items that I think our communities agree with and be very clear about what our expectations are. Yes. And I believe that this will make law enforcement safer as well.
We have just a minute to go. Senator Wongard, do you see any consensus on this?
Well, I would just say the state statute is not city policy. The policy that has to be brought forth by the departments is to protect the department, the community, and the officer from any undue exploitation by the media and everybody else. It's tough enough for them to do their job to begin with. And I would say, you know, I would ask, how many times has the representative gone out and ridden in a really bad area in her district and spent several eight-hour tours with these guys and see what they actually go through? I think that is an eye-opener for a lot of people, that they don't understand what those officers are already going through. And the department, if they don't have a policy and procedure, they should have a policy and procedure. We had them since 1972 when I got in the department. And so I guess I would probably say that a department, if they don't have one, they're looking for some real problems with liability. And that's why most of them do now. So I think our officers do a really great job in general, statewide, and it has been proven out in most cases that they do a good job and they do have the responsibility to serve and protect, and that's exactly what they're doing. So
that'll have to be last word. We're out of time. Thank you both very much for being with us. Van Wongard, Republican State Senator from Racine, and Chris Taylor, a Democratic State Representative from Madison. You can continue to vote in our online big question at wpr.org/joy.